It's PGA or none, and you either qualify for the tournaments or you don't.
Well, interesting.
And so this,
I don't know how that works. I know there's a lot of pre-qualifying. Like,
yeah,
I watched Happy Gilmore. I know how it works.
But that's what I'm all. It's for. All run by the PGA,
right?
This isn't.
Okay.
So that makes this a very interesting conundrum because now you have actual. I wouldn't necessarily call it competition, but
yeah.
There's been a bunch of people participate that PGA would rather not. So antitrust issues are a fun one because, you know, when you live, when you sit down and say that you're pro, you're pro free markets, but then you let a company control the free market. That's not a free market.
So Trump's a hero.
Potentially.
Potentially a hero.
It's time now for something positive.
We might be headed to the promised land.
The promised land, speaking the truth, and finding our external liberty once we internally liberate ourselves.
Problem can only be solved when there is a kind of coalition of conscience.
Because that is how it works.
This is the beginning. It is not the finale. And that's why we're here. And that's why we rally.
We've got to be that creative minority.
Find a way to get in the way. I got in trouble. It was good trouble. It was necessary trouble.
Frankly, I know we've got to do something.
And we're back. Yeah, okay, keep going, because that was where I liked where you were going there.
So, because of Brittany Griner's scenario where she's, held captive in Russia,
right?
I really do think that what you're going to see is you're going to see more people rally around her and the WNBA, and people are going to start to see what they have to offer. Yeah. Maybe what you end up having is something that's a bit more family friendly, something mm-hmm. where, you've got the NBA and you've got all the star power there, but maybe you find something a bit more wholesome and maybe you'll eventually find something a bit more exciting. There were times playing high school basketball, I came from a small town and our small town girls team ended up on a run of championships at the state level where they were actually exciting to watch. They played right. really well together. They did great together. And I think that you're starting to see some of that build because remember a lot, like in the NBA, you go through phases where you just have one powerhouse team that seems to do really well.
Right.
But then other times you end up like you have a bunch of really good players that are spread out among a bunch of really, decent teams.
Parity.
And you end up right. with more competition, more parity.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, I don't think anybody's ever looked at the WNBA like that. Like, there's just more actual competition. People are looking at, like your Steph Currys right uh-huh. now. That dude is unstoppable.
Right.
For a while, people were, absolutely infatuated with Blake Griffin because the dude could dunk and dunk with authority.
I just think it's lacking representation for 51% of their audience.
Well,
and I think the WNBA is going to be... I don't think people have been looking at life through the lens of representation, but I think younger people are, and I think they really see something to admire in women's basketball, and I think that is going to drive men to want to please the women they're with and at least go and attend that too. And that once men start seeing how awesome the women can play, I think it's cool. And in a utopia, they would all be playing together. I mean,
here's the reality is that, unless you grew up, watching women's sports or have kids in women's sports, like you just don't have the connection to it. That's right. just a reality. It's kind of like, who gives a shit about football until you have the mom, the mom doesn't necessarily give a shit about football until, suddenly they've got a kid that's playing.
Right. Exactly.
And that's realistically where that's at. The NBA and the NFL and NHL and MLB have had a long, 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 long time to be a part of the major spotlight. The WNBA is a fairly recent addition. I want to say 96 Did the WNBA start?
Right. I'm not quite sure. But that, yeah, that's my exact point. If you took the beginning of the NBA, it might look a lot like
96.
It might look like the beginning of the WNBA.
So think about it. The WNBA is not even 30 years old yet.
Right. That's cool.
So, you know, whereas, you know, men's basketball has had a century, more than a century. Mm-hmm. Baseball has had more than a century. Soccer has had more than a century.
Right.
The NHL has had about a century.
Right. And it's weird.
Like, that, it's like, just, you don't have, there's just, there just hasn't been enough time yet.
That's right. That's right. No, not enough exposure, not enough how to learn to how to advertise for it. I don't see ads for women's basketball all the time, but when I do, they look cool. They look just as cool as the NBA's, you know what I mean? But I'm not a big fan of basketball. So for me, watching women's basketball is like nobody knows about it and I can just watch it and it's cool. Like, I like volleyball too. I like sports. I like sports where there is parity. And I think that's my issue with why I tuned out of the NFL, besides the brain damage that they're doing to people, is the fact that there isn't a lot of parity. All the players seem to gravitate towards some teams, and then like the Bears, they suck, and I hate it.
You know, for me, being a Giants fan, like I got, you know, at least in my, you know, later lifetime, I got two teams that, let's be real honest, the 2007 and 2011 Giants were not great teams.
Right.
They were scrappy as fuck. And for me, that was exciting because, you know, the Patriots were a fucking juggernaut.
Right.
But here you had this absolutely scrappy team go out and beat this absolutely unstoppable force.
Right.
And it was wild.
That's what the WNBA to me now is. Like, and something I can watch that's like true competition as opposed to the fantasy version that the NFL became.
Yeah. And that's just it. It's like, there's, you know, you're going to hit that point in the WNBA, especially where it's like you start to see this really, you know, these really scrappy competitions, these really intense rivalries that you have with men's sports. And I think at some point that's going to be a fantastic place. But at the same time too, I think you're also starting to see a lot of political fracture in the idea of men's and women's sports, because we're now having this, you know, the conversation of whether or not trans people even belong in sports at all. And people are starting to get really annoyed. And the fact that even after, you know, all this time, homophobia still runs rampant in professional sports.
People are getting annoyed. I'm getting annoyed that the conversation has to be had.
Right.
So I'm tired of it being thrown up as red meat for a conservative audience to get mad at trans people for.
It's really difficult to sit down and talk about how much you love and enjoy sports, but then have to constantly talk about the politics of, you know, I think people are starting to turn to more alternative sports simply because you don't necessarily have this, it's a men's only or a women's only. You have people competing in competitions all against each other, and you're taking home, you know, you're up against everybody. You know, skateboarding has become one of those ones where, you know, there's been some men's skating tournaments and some women's skating tournaments, and there was actually controversy, you know, because there was a trans skater who, you know, won the women's tournament somewhere, and I guess some of the other women's skateboarders were not thrilled with this. And I'm sitting here going, man, you know, I know a lot of skaters in the community. You know, I was once a part of it, and I don't know that anybody really cared so much.
No.
And it's been one of those things where it's like, it's a real struggle to understand why people are so like the idea of just pure competition, like finding places where, you know, people compete against each other, or, you know, mixed teams or things like that. To me, like, you know, having mixed teams is, you know, going to become, I think, one of the next great bonding places. Because
me too. That's what I'm hoping for.
because right now it's like just the politics of trying to enjoy a sport, you know, if you want to, is just frustrating. Like it just,
yeah,
it's not fun.
This thing about keeping things so pure in a world that's ever mixing and changing and evolving is just so weird, you know, to me. And I like, mm-hmm. I think the utopian version is everybody being able to do what they want. You know, I don't see trans. I see the people that are competing saying, I think that might be an issue or it might not. I don't see me having a place in that. I'm the guy that gets to watch the final product, the competition. Everything else should be ironed out for me by then, and it should be up to the people competing. And I know that other athletes, they want to compete. They want somebody that wants to compete. And so it's not about gender for them. It's about beginning and starting, you know, like the beginning of the race, the end of the race, who won, I'm better. You know,
I think, and that's the thing, is like, I think that somebody is eventually going to get tired of it. They're going to create, you know, the all purpose sport where you have to have, a mixture, mm-hmm. a co-ed sport or, you know, it's more than that anymore, but you know, where you have to have a certain diversification of your team,
yeah.
in order to, you know, play and right.
weight class and, for fucking positions and such, you know?
And I think the first sport that figures that out, for some reason, I think it'll be soccer, that, you know, when you finally create like a co-ed sport and now it's, you know, it's not just, you know, the men's team that you're following, and it's not just the women's team, but you actually have these teams that are comprised uh-huh. of multiple people that, you know, are going out and fighting multiple people on the pitch. I think yeah. realistically, you're going to start to see more gravitation towards sports again.
That's what
I want. Rather than just, you know, the men's team or the women's team. Like if you can sit down and, you know, you don't have to worry about the makeup of the team and have to right. explain politics. Like, that's so yeah. funny. You know,
you said makeup and my dictation went, wake up.
No, <stop. laughs>
All right. Yeah. No, I totally love that. Like wrestling is a weight class based thing. And I think mm-hmm. people are always like, but that guy is genetically bigger than any woman. Have you seen Britney? She would crush me. I think weight class is important, but I don't think what's in your pants should make a difference on who straps the pads up. You know what I mean?
I don't know who needs to know this, but Shaq wasn't exactly a prolific dunker because he was 7'2".
I know, right?
He was a big guy who yeah. could dunk it.
Right.
And it doesn't matter. If you got a big girl who could dunk it, great. If you have somebody who's, you know, tall and trans that can dunk it, right. great. Like, I mean, realistically, I mean, like some of those tall players, they were not fucking great dunkers.
Right.
You look at Yao Ming. Yao Ming was not a great dunker, but he was fucking tall. Dikembe Mutombo, he was not a great dunker, but he was right. fucking tall.
Michael you Jordan, know? The best, and he was average.
Yeah.
6'3", right? 6'5"?
I thought he was 6'6".
It could be somewhere in there.
Allen Iverson was only 6 foot tall.
Right.
And that guy could fly.
Yeah.
Look at Ray Allen. Ray Allen, good grief. You know, but here's the thing is that eventually, you know, as people begin to figure out, you know, how do you draw in the most amount of crowd? How do you make right. it so that way people want to come see your team play? They're going to start to realize that, you know, the more diversified a team is, the more diversified a sport is,
yeah,
the more likely you are to get, you know, families dropping money to see something rather than one person.
We want to see the competition. We don't want to see routing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think so. Brittany Griner going against a man of her stature, I would love to see that. I think people would pay to see man versus woman that way, but it has to be even. You can't go for a Shaq and like a, you know, I don't know, Lisa Schreiber or something, some tiny little mm-hmm. girl. But if it's competitive, I think people would pay to see mixed leagues like that. Professional athletes like, I don't know, Dwayne Wade in with women that can, you know, actually compete or lose, but compete. I think that's what we want to see.
Right. And so, you know, I, my hope is that at some point sports go beyond and really, really dive into, you know, how do you create a wide variety team sport that people will then catch on to, and we all get to just enjoy the game because, you know, it doesn't matter who all is on the team.
Yeah. You know? Can have your, you can have your NFL full of guys. You can have your, you know, women's league full of women, or you can have this one that I'm going to be watching.
Right.
And still, I don't like it. I don't like the violence of it. Like Demaryius Thomas, I grew up watching that guy in Denver. When I thought he was awesome. I didn't think he was the best, but I thought in Colorado he was really awesome. And to find out he was like, he had stage 3 brain damage because of that. That just really hurts me to think that could be avoided. So
yeah.
I have an issue with the NFL overall. Like, I don't know if I have that issue with the NBA. I've never really got into the NBA because when I was about to, the Bulls were super popular and I was like, well, I can't jump on the bandwagon. You know what I mean? So I never got into basketball.
Well, and I mean, like, you know, boxing with the brain damage, MMA with the brain damage.
Right. I don't
football
watch
football with the brain damage.
I can't watch.
I guarantee you NHL has the same issues. Uh-huh. Like, it's like, do we love seeing somebody get the shit smacked out of them? Yeah, sure. We enjoy that every once in a while. But the problem, you know, I think a lot of us enjoyed it a lot more when, you know, we were completely naive to the fact that it was causing brain damage. Some of us are like, ugh, this is a tough sell for me now because this person is, you know, it's hurting people. It's killing people.
Right. And we don't need that. I mean, we just don't need it in our sports. You know, I don't need it in my sport. I don't watch MMA. To me, it's gross. I think I just came out of the closet. To me, I just don't like those kind of competitions.
Well, you know, and I think it just like, you know, I loved that stuff growing up. Like I loved playing football. I loved the feeling of laying the hit down on somebody. But after, you know, after I got my head injury,
right,
like it changed. It changed me. I was like, this isn't worth it. This sucks. Right. This does not feel good. And then to find out that it just kept getting worse. And, you know, and a lot of the times, like some of these older players, you know, they'd become drunks or drug addicts or violent. And we were just like, well, you know, washed up stars. Turns out brain damage is a hell of a fucking drug.
It really is.
So
and it goes unnoticed. So and I've always been the Olympics kid. I always loved watching the Olympics. I remember wishing that the Olympics would go back to Greece one day. And when they did, I was just like, awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I like the competition aspect of it. I don't mind. I mean, I don't like seeing anybody get hurt, but somebody getting hurt, giving it their all in a competition like that, side by side, not attacking. I love the chess of football, though. Like, I've got to admit the strategy of it. I'm putting this defense up. You're putting that offense up. Go. You know, the hitting seems to be the extra for entertainment. And there's less and less of it in every sport, more and more. We're just not there yet.
Yep.
Man. I don't have anything to segue to from sports, buddy.
Oh, God.
Oh, wait. Yes, I do. How do you feel about golf?
I hate golf.
Yeah, I do too. So let's talk about the Live Open. Is that nice? Is that good? Because Donald Trump is like off. So Donald Trump is hosting a Saudi Arabian backed golf contest. What do you call that?
Tournament.
A golf tournament. And he's saying, well, nobody really got to the bottom of 9/11, and we, you know, we can't prove that the Saudis were involved in any way, but a lot of people believe that Operation Encore kind of at least shows that they had some part in it, and that like first responders, police unions, fire unions are saying Trump is dead to them now because he doesn't stand by America. So I forgot to say Saudi ambassador Donald Trump is hosting the Live Open. And so I don't care as much about the the who's in it, I think they're getting paid, and anybody that's going to get paid $1 million to play a round of golf should say yes, you know. But
they're going to. Absolutely.
But as far as Donald Trump and his political career, I think this could affect him, and it might be affecting him.
So I think that, so politics, I'm going to fuck off from that one because the politics of it are a shit show.
Okay.
The actual interesting part of this is the antitrust issue. Because the PGA is having a massive issue with some of its golfers going to participate in this tournament.
Really? Because
it's not a PGA sanctioned event.
Wow, cool.
And so basically what has happened is that you know the PGA has been threatening golfers that participate in this and take the money, that you know that they're going against contracts and all this other fun stuff in terms of playing the sport.
Wow.
This has raised an antitrust issue because there are no other professional golf sports in the U.S.
except women's golf.
Except the LPGA.
Wow, a better segue than I thought. How about that?
and so this non-affiliated golf tournament that is drawing a lot of PGA golfers has been a significant problem for the PGA. In that, number one, they decided to open their mouth about this, and number two, now it looks like they're going to be under antitrust investigations for basically, you know, trying to run a monopoly on golf in the country.
Oh no. Trump is going to destroy the one sport that he loves just for money.
That's really interesting to actually see, because, you know, there are other, you know, like with a lot of the basketball, you know, like for example, football and basketball, you have a bunch of quote unquote minor league teams, you know, and so like you don't have. You don't know. They're literally farms for the major leagues, essentially.
Right, right, right.
And so you don't necessarily actually have competition, but you do have a way to watch people play basketball or baseball when it's not the major teams. So that's where this really gets fun.
Interesting.
Because, you know, in this case, you know, if there is no other, you know, there is no like minor league golf. It's PGA or none, and you either qualify for the tournaments or you don't.
Well, interesting.
And so this,
I don't know how that works. I know there's a lot of pre-qualifying, like,
yeah,
I watched Happy Gilmore. I know how it works.
But that's but it's all run by the PGA.
Right.
This isn't.
Okay.
So that makes this a very interesting conundrum, because now you have actual, I wouldn't necessarily call it competition, but
yeah,
there's been a bunch of people participate that PGA would rather not. So antitrust issues are a fun one, because, you know, when you sit down and say that you're pro, you know, you're pro free markets, but then you let a company control the free market, that's not a free market.
So Trump's a hero.
Potentially.
Potentially a hero.
I mean,
in 6 years, who has ever said that?
But that's the thing. He's a self-serving jackass more than anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what this does is it highlights potential monopoly issues. And that's one of the things that has been on legislators' minds as of late, is antitrust issues.
Wow. So Donald Trump will basically be a wrecking ball in anything Americans love just so that he can get some money.
I mean, that's the dude wanted to have a football team so bad. He wanted, like, you know,
yeah,
he's run teams, you know, he's tried to run teams. I want to say he had a USFL team. Now the USFL is back of all things.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then you got the XFL coming back. I mean,
Donald Trump should focus on becoming a commissioner of a league that could put the PGA out of business.
Oh, God.
He should focus all of his time and efforts on building a better... He should be the commissioner of the next, the DPGA, Donald Trump Professional Golf. I like that. Just, I don't want him to be president.
So with these antitrust issues, it We'll start to highlight ways in which I honestly think that Congress could potentially look at some of these other, you know, major issues like big tech, for example, and how do you antitrust them?
How do you antitrust them? There's a commercial that keeps coming on saying, don't allow Democrats to pass this radical bill for tech. And I'm like, what exactly is the bill? I'd look it up if you actually told me what it was. You know? But that's the knock on, like in Florida, that's a big knock on Democrats down here. Democrats want to stifle tech growth. And I'm like, how? Tell me how. Tell me. I want to know.
I think they're trying to revive net neutrality is what's happening.
Whatever.
You know, and that's the funny thing is that, you know, the Republicans have had such a problem with the big tech organizations and the Democrats have had a problem with the big tech organizations. But somehow they can't agree on addressing the big tech organizations.
I know. Well, because Republicans really love people with money. You know? So big tech to them is like the quandary. Like, I hate you. You're killing America, but thanks for the money.
Yep.
Ugh, I don't know. I think it's all gross. And Elon Musk is going to be in court soon. I can't wait to see how that goes.
That'll be a fun one.
So the Republicans, so there was this thing about burn pits, right? Remember I was talking about burn pits? And they passed a bill, and I actually congratulated Matt Gaetz for voting on a bill that would fund medicine, the VA, to actually address this issue. And then all of a sudden, Republicans in the Senate are blocking it.
Yep.
And people are, there was a man that was actually fighting for this that committed suicide because this stalled. And that really hurt me, and I wanted to address it because this is a real thing. So Republicans are voting. What they're saying is Democrats want the next 10 years, they want to fund it with $40 million, and they don't like, Republicans don't like making that because then it'll be a standard and then we can increase the funding. But the funding goes to actually taking care of the situation like anything does. If you create something, you need to build paperwork and protocols and all the things that government does. And so that's really not a bad price tag over 10 years. But then Republicans are like, we want to cap that and then we want to end it after 10 years. And veterans aren't going to stop being sick in 10 years. So I wanted to address it because the burn pit bill is pretty important to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it should be important to a lot of people in America. And I think Republicans are out on a limb on this one because everybody knows about this. And I don't think they can spin this properly, you know?
Nope.
It sucks.
Nope.
They need to fund. They need to fund the VA. The VA needs to fund this, you know? So they need money to do that. And so putting that aside and voting on it every year is exactly what that's what we do, right?
What should be done? I mean, the biggest. This is one of those things where one of our biggest gaps, consistently dealing with the armed forces, has been. How do we treat them after they get back?
Right.
Because, you know, there is a lot of suicide. There's a lot of mental health issues. There's a lot of drug abuse. There's a lot of physical abuse. There's a lot of, you know, illnesses. There's a lot of
PTS, you know, homelessness. You know, there's,
you've got a lot of problems. Now, the thing is that some of these things are caused by things that we do or things that, you know, are done, you know, in order to, you know, in the course of war that you just don't expect. And right. That's one of the things that needs to be looked at and addressed, because I think that we were expecting sarin gas and burn pits? No, I don't really think we were.
I don't think any soldier was. I think any soldier expected to fight and die, but not sit and waste. You know what I mean?
So, and it's one of those things where, you know, we have to start asking Congress to look more holistically at what happens, because, you know, you had in World War I troops come back that had been exposed to mustard gas and things like that. And they were sick for a long time afterwards. There were major problems, and it's no different, you know, World War II, you had people come back with the trauma of either dealing with, you know, the Japanese army or dealing with, you know, the concentration camps that they found. You had things that were unexpected and so horrific that it changed them. Vietnam, we had people that were exposed to multiple chemicals. You know, you had Gulf War syndrome, and now you have the burn pits. You know what, you know, and from what I'm to understand, Gulf War syndrome and the burn pits, they seem to both be derived from exposure to sarin gas. If I'm understanding that correctly.
A burn pit was everything. They just threw the garbage and put jet fuel on it and lit it. And it was literally not a half a mile away from the bases, you know?
So, but with this exposure, you know, it has created a massive health problem. And the thing is that we know how bad sarin gas is. We know how bad it is. And it's always been concerning. And so the fact of the matter is that if we're going to be sending our kids off to places like, you know, Iraq, where we knew that, you know, Saddam was gassing his own people.
Right.
The thing is that you have to start including that as part of the calculation of, well, what were our soldiers exposed to when they got back? Yeah. And that's the rough part, because that opens up potentially a lot of shit. It really does. And I understand the fiscal want and need to not spend that kind of money to deal with it. But if you don't want to spend that kind of money on people when they get back, then you shouldn't be sending them in the first place.
Right. That's the consequence of sending them there. That's the real answer. What you need to think about. We can't just have a forever war so that Halliburton can make a fortune, right? Because at some point the price comes into the people.
Exactly. You know, and you know, there are other things that, you know, the Army has done, you know, or the armed forces have done, you know, for example, like TBI clinics has been a big one that they've gone and they've been looking at trying to improve upon, because, you know, soldiers, they have major issues when they are they're being rocked around inside of these helicopters, when they're taking,
right,
you know, they're taking mortar fire, they're, you know, inside of tanks or whatever have you, you know, brain injuries happen. But, you know, at least within some of those realms, they've actually gotten to the point where they're trying to appropriately deal with some of those things through clinics that are within the Army or the military proper.
I think that's appreciated, but when somebody signs up for war, I think they can expect certain elements of damage. I don't think it's fair to think that your government is harming you in the course of that. Like, I think that's the difference between the burn pit and sitting in a tank and getting shell shock and PTSD from it. Like, we should expect the PTSD, because that's kind of built into the soldier's life, and we should already be addressing that when they come home. Like, you know what I mean? But like, mm-hmm. the burn pit, to think that the military didn't put thought into it and harmed so many people. You need to fix that. You need to fix that because you caused that. Like, mm-hmm. I see football helmets are getting bigger and bigger. If they just got rid of the football helmet, we'd be like, wait, what? We can't actively harm these people, so we need to get them help.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck.
So yeah.
That's gross. Yeah. They were sitting there. I mean, I can't imagine what's in a burn pit. Like, all the medical waste as well as all the, like, human parts. You know what I mean? Like, when I think about the things that were burned, none of it could have been healthy.
Oh, God, no. No.
Okay, that's awesome. It's not enough. So I saw somebody saying that they will always stand by and protect Medicare and Medicaid. Maggie Hassan. And it made it, I had this thought, like, it was this epiphany of where Democrats are going wrong. It's not enough to protect it, obviously, right? Because there's people behind the scenes cutting this shit to death. That's what happened to abortion. Democrats were like, we'll protect abortion forever. But behind the scenes, Republicans are like, cut me off and eat another piece of that abortion, right? And now, obviously, it's in Rick the Republican's plan to eliminate Medicare and Medicaid, to put a 5-year sunset unless it's renewed. And she says she'll protect it. And I say, it's not enough to protect it. Can you improve it while you defend it? And I think that's where Democrats need to be. Their messaging needs to be, we need to improve this while protecting it, you know? Because so much of this stuff, like Nancy Pelosi said it about the ADA. The ADA has protected so many people for years, but it isn't helping us. Like, you haven't like updated it. Could you improve it while protecting us? And what do you think about that? Do you think that's something, or am I overreacting to the situation? Should we sunset Medicare? Has it outlived its usefulness?
I don't know that it's outlived its usefulness, but I think it has outgrown its effectiveness, realistically. Because, I mean, how many administrators do you have to deal with in Medicare?
I don't know.
So here would be my answer. It's like, if you were on Medicare, let's say...
I am on Medicare.
I know you are. But let's say that, you know, the process is really just... You know, there's a certain number of boxes that you have to check. It's not so much administrative,
right?
But it's like, bam, here's the money you've got, you know, for the whole year. You know, you could, based on the amount of money that's going into Medicare, lose a ton of administration, and you might actually have more money towards, you know, actual care.
Instead of $3,000 a year, I could have $5,000.
Yeah, which, you know, would be a significant jump. You wouldn't
Suspend myself.
You wouldn't necessarily, you know, be getting, you know, additional coverage, but you would have additional services that you could seek that would improve your life.
Right.
To balance what it is that you're going after.
Medicare tells me I can't refill a prescription for test strips. I need to use one a day. And that's all they'll give me is they'll give me 100, but I can only use one a day because I can only get them every 3 months. But if they just put the money in an account, then I could spend the test strips all I wanted because I'm not spending it on other stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, perhaps Medicare has gotten to the point where it's like, you know, maybe the idea of quote unquote Medicare for all is, you know, we remove the administration part of it, you know, move towards, you know, there are negotiated Medicare services. And what you do from there is you have your Medicare debit card,
right,
that you go in and pay for your agreed upon services, and understand that, you know, Medicare is going to only cover limited services. Anything additional, you're gonna have to go out on your own. And sure. So now, you know, you've got $5,000 that's more in a cash based system that has pre-negotiated rates, and you actually get better care. You actually have more access to care. So those are things to think about and consider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the administration part of it. Like, when you look at how much administration gets added to pretty much any government program,
right,
it doesn't surprise me that it becomes fiscally inefficient, or, you know, that, you know, you're not getting anywhere because, you know, you've added a bunch of people that are meant to, you know, figure out how to deny services.
Right.
Or keep you from getting the service altogether, period.
Because they're cutting the budget as they're also expanding the people. So they're bringing more people on in an expansion of it, but then they're eliminating the budget on the back end, so they can't afford anything other than the people.
Whereas if you were to actually sit down and say, hey, look, if we could negotiate the rate on, you know, if all these hospitals could agree with the United States government that for, you know, here's a list of Medicare services, and this is what the charge amount is every time you go into the hospital for, you know, this list of Medicare services, this is what you're going to pay. Period. Right. End of story. You swipe your Medicare debit card and that's that. Game over.
Right.
It becomes a lot more simplistic, you know, because now your administration is more focused on the actual, you know, how do we negotiate prices for certain things, so that way, number one, hospitals get paid and they're not going broke doing these services.
Correct.
But now people don't necessarily feel like they're going backwards on the services that they can get because, you know, they're not being administrated out of X, Y, and Z.
That's right. I think because I thought to myself, I can't afford to go to the hospital. Like, I have to fix the stuff myself. And so I started wondering if people are anti-vax, if they're weary of science and medicine, because they've kind of been priced out of the process that would have educated them by nature. Like if you go to the hospital for preventative means, you grow accustomed to that and you learn to trust it. But if you don't have the money for those basic services and you never go to the doctor, you start thinking, well, maybe they're bad because I can't afford it. And I can't admit that I can't afford it. So I'm just going to say that it's bad and I don't want to use it. You know what I mean?
I think there's a part that's true to that, in that, you know,
there's always part that's true to my theories.
You've got, you know, you definitely have a group of people who have never been able to afford, you know, like an annual trip to the doctor for checkups. I mean, hell, the only time I ever went to the doctor when I was a kid was because I was sick. Right. And we were past the point of trying the over-the-counter remedies.
Right. So, Windex didn't work.
So when you run to that point, when you get to that point where, you know, going to the doctor is really a luxury,
mm-hmm.
it becomes rough. Like, how are you supposed to sit down and tell people, hey, you know, you need to go to the doctor and you need to trust what they say when, you know,
right.
You know, if their only exposure is, hey, I've got a cold that's lasting too long. Oops, turns out it wasn't a cold.
Exactly. But I think people by nature push against that kind of stuff. Like, oh, I'm too cool for that, for medicine. But honestly, if you're not feeling good, wouldn't you want to feel better? I just wish we lived in a society where I could go to the hospital and they would be like, zip, 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 here's what's wrong with you. You know what I mean?
Well, here's the problem is that, you know, the first time you do that, I don't feel good, I should go to the doctor, and they charge you $150 to say, go take fucking Robitussin.
That's right.
That's a real hard thing to sit down and tell people, go to the doctor. Why? Because they're just going to tell me to take Robitussin.
That's right.
And so it's kind of like you kind of have to have this balance of, what can I treat by myself, and at what point do I need to go, ooh, I'm beyond, you know, over-the-counter remedies, and I actually need to go see a doctor.
Right, but you're going to get that $150 if you go see the doctor. If you can't afford it for the Robitussin and the flu, you can't afford it for anything more serious.
Right.
That's kind of my point. Like, if a doctor just lowered its rates and said, I'm not going to see you until you're dying, that's fine. Make it free. And when I, you know, if I'm in pain and you validate the fact that I'm here, then go ahead and do that. I don't know.
Well, like, that's where I think tech has absolutely, you know, started to help the scenario where, you know, you know, like, we started getting, you know, health insurance with charge nurse lines, you know, people that you could call that would, you know, you would tell them what you're going through and they would, you know, give you I wouldn't go to the doctor. I would just pick up, you know, something
like a nurse or practitioner, them, right?
You know, and it wasn't even that. They were nurses. I don't know that they were nurse practitioners, but they were like people that you could at least bounce your symptoms off of, and they could ask a few probing questions to help determine whether or not you needed to actually go to the doctor.
Right.
You know, because then at least you would at least have something to kind of start to move you towards that. But most people don't have access. If you didn't have health insurance, you didn't have access to a charge line.
That's right. And you're just asking your friends, like, have you ever had this? Is this right? And so you don't trust the doctor anymore. You trust your friends more and their experience, you know.
But then now with the advent of telehealth, you know, telehealth is a lot cheaper. And for, you know, even if you needed a basic prescription, you know, for something, spending $150 to go to the doctor's office was a lot less tenable, is a lot less tenable than potentially spending $40 on a telehealth visit. Yeah. You know, it's easier to justify spending $40 compared to $150.
Right.
And you'll feel pissed off if it's like, you know, drink lots of water, get some rest, and there's nothing that you can do about it. Or, you know, if it's like, oh yeah, nope, it sounds like you need just a general antibiotic.
Right.
You know, great. You know, a $40 visit and a $10 or $5 antibiotic, and you come out way ahead than if you'd gone to the doctor's office.
Exactly.
And also too, the convenience of it, because a lot of the times, you know, especially now, like for me, there were a few times where I would get sick and then I would make an appointment to go see a doctor, mm-hmm. and it would take me 2 weeks to get into a doctor.
Right.
And by the time those 2 weeks were up, I wasn't sick anymore.
And that, you know,
or I'd gotten worse.
Right. My thought was like I like the health savings account when it came to the Medicare, as we were talking about it. My issue is that all of this stuff is overbloated in its cost, right? Mm-hmm. Like, to use an MRI machine that you've paid for isn't that expensive. You know what I mean? Like,
all right. This is another fun one.
We talk about it once in a while, but I think the medical costs are bloated to the point that I can't afford it.
So this is where this gets fun with the medical equipment. So I love the idea that, you know, these hospitals are paying cash for these pieces of equipment, but a lot of the times small hospitals especially are financing them.
Or getting them hand-me-down when a bigger hospital upgrades, then they get the other. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. That's the service that I know and I'm very familiar with.
Yeah.
And so you end up having to finance some of these things.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you're paying because they got to pay for that financing.
Right. A drug company makes a drug, then they then sell it so they can recoup their research development. Like, I understand, like, buying an MRI machine and having the cost of it, you know, taken on by the patient. But at some point, it becomes a generic. You've paid it off, and all you're paying is the insurance and the infrastructure, right? Like, three times the cost.
That should be your hope. With major medical systems, absolutely, that's probably the case, because they've got that thing running constantly to pay it off. But like with your smaller hospitals, your local critical care places, absolutely not the case. They're most likely, you know, the number of times you might use that MRI machine is very minimal. And so some of these places have had to get creative by buying mobile MRI machines.
Yeah.
And then all you have like three or four hospitals that, you know, are spreading out the cost of this mobile MRI machine.
I've done one of those. Yeah.
So, you know, because they don't have the traffic to try and get it paid off.
Right.
But if you don't have access to it, it's a big problem.
Well, if your MRI machine is built to go out of date in 5 years, but it's built also to be financed for 10 years, you're always going to be upgrading. You're always going to be behind the ball. And the patient pays the price for that. And there's got to be a way to deal with that, because if I get $3,000 a year from Medicare and I go, oh my gosh, my kidney hurts maybe. And they go, well, we'll give you an MRI. I'm fucked at a $1,500 MRI cost.
Oh yeah.
You know? For the whole year, even if there's something majorly wrong with me, how do I go forward? You know what I mean? So
right.
It scares people into not using it. And then they're there for emergency major stuff that destroys their lives, when we should just be able to have preventative should be free in some way for people. You know, we just got to get past the financial barrier of preventative care. If people just learned to brush their teeth or had dental health, we could save thousands of lives. You know what I mean?
That's one of the biggest pieces that people are trying to figure out right now, and in especially in rural health, is, you know, how do we get some of these basics and encourage people to come in and get these basic services,
right?
And have it not be so burdensome on them. And you know, some places are getting creative with it, some aren't.
Discount.
that's just it. This is that, you know, if you discount it. You know, remember, it's, you know, you still got to pay your insurance. You still got to pay the lights. You still got to pay the doctors. You still got to pay the nurses.
Oh, I totally agree.
And that's where some of these guys have figured out. It's like, look, if we could just get paid cash that day. Yeah. Easy peasy.
Yeah, I totally get it. But there's got
to. And then that's why I think that, you know, if you took Medicare and you shifted it to a, you know, here, you know, the Medicare administrative part of it is literally finding services that you can negotiate the price on,
right,
that you would have access to across the entire US.
I like
the same cost,
because if I go to a doctor and say, this is my income level, and they give me that sliding scale that says, all right, this is your price, I'm good with that. I've paid $80 for a therapist before because I was on the sliding scale that said that's what it was. I've also paid $5 for a therapist, the same therapist, because that's where my sliding scale was. I like that idea. I like that a lot.
The problem with you won't see the sliding scale be as effective as you want it to be, unfortunately, because eventually what ends up happening is you end up getting a bunch of people who are $5 and it's not necessarily sustainable. Right. And but if
you rich people don't go where poor people go for their health.
And so if you end up, you know, with a list of services, you know, Medicare says this is what, you know, this is what the cost, what we're going to pay is, you know, what we can pay because we've negotiated with hospitals. And now you've got a Medicare debit card that you just walk in, you get the service, you, you know, get paid on that. Boom. Like the thing is that when you have to file through Medicare and you have to wait 150 days to get paid by Medicare, that negotiated rate really fucks you. But if you have the rate pre-negotiated and now it's just you walk in, boom, there's your Medicare fee that you've been pre-approved for that runs on your debit card. Great. That's fantastic. Let's move along. I think that's how you end up reforming Medicare in order for it to be more effective.
Medicare does work with the $3,000, like in the middle of there, they're like, we're not going to pay. you can spend like $1,500 and then all of a sudden they're like, no, now there's this donut hole where you pay everything. And then later on, they're like, all right, we're back. we're going to give you the rest of the $1,500, but we're only going to give it to you 75% at a time. And then once you go over that, it stays at 75%. So if I was to spend $50,000 on a surgery, I would have to pay 25% of that, which is pretty scary. Because surgeries are fucking expensive, you know?
Right.
And at some point, people are like, I'd rather die than to go into debt for that, you know?
Yep. Shit. And it's understandable.
Yeah. So I sympathize with you. I'm in the same boat. That sucks. Wow. So we have about 10 minutes left. I don't know. What should I do? Bring up another topic?
No. What do you got?
Okay. I knew if I got to this topic, we had gone too far. So, people in Israel are conducting post-mortem sperm retrievals on dead men. So, when a soldier dies, you know, the wife is like, I don't have any children. I wanted a child with that soldier. Go get his semen, because semen lasts 72 hours after death. Now it's a big thing.
That's a new one for me. I've not heard about this.
Oh, good. I'm on the cutting edge. Wow. That's a metaphor. So I guess do you have any ethical issues with just a man having his scrotum cut open after he dies and his sperm stolen and frozen for a later date for it's not just a spouse. It could be anybody. Anybody could just want it.
I mean, my ethics on this would say, you know, it needs to be an opt-in process. So like if he signs up and they're like, hey, you know, do you want to, you know, after you die, would you like to have, you know, what's left of your sperm frozen? So that way a spouse or whoever could potentially have your child.
Are you an organ donor?
Essentially, like it should be an opt-in thing, and if they opt in and say yes, then fantastic. All right, cool. But I don't even know how to respond to that.
Right. They're doing it in Israel, and yeah, it was kind of nice that this lady could continue that because she loved him and he loved her, and I would probably say no. Like if you asked me to opt in or not, you would have to be as an organ donor, because I wouldn't specifically say yes. You could cut up my scrotum when I die. I just wouldn't do it. I don't know why.
Like is it considered necrophilia if you're grabbing a load from a dead guy?
I don't know. That's another good point. If it's science, I don't know.
I just, there's so many questions that I have.
I love it. I'll send you the article.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
Do you want to know why we say sperm instead of spermatozoa?
Spermatozoa? Why?
Because spermatozoa is a mouthful.
Oh, gross. Snowball. Come on.
But like, you know, it's one of those things where,
I don't know. I don't want to judge anybody. If you want
to, I can't judge. It's, you know, I would say that if you have agreements with a spouse,
right,
you know, yeah, I mean, so I say go for it. But
if,
like,
if a soldier dies, the military takes care of the family, right? So if the family then is born after the soldier dies, that is that or something, maybe.
I think that was actually where I was thinking. I'm like, you know, if the soldier is dead and the wife becomes pregnant afterwards, you know, is the kid going to be considered part of that equation, and are they going to be cared for after that death? Because I could honestly see a scenario, you know, at least in American politics, I can't frame this around, you know, whatever it looks like in Israeli politics. What I can see is that there would be an issue where you have the potential of, you know, someone saying, no, we're not going to cover because that kid was not born during, you know, your spouse's, you know, service tenure. And I really think that that would honestly be pretty fucking bad in a lot of cases. You know, because here you would have somebody who's desperate to have a child with somebody that they loved and that, you know, they wanted to continue that lineage on. But now, you know, you would potentially be forced to do that alone without any help, without any coverage from, you know, the entities that you supposedly were going to have coverage from. So I honestly don't know what to say about that other than realistically, I could see where there could be a ton of problems.
Me too. I just went to the bathroom and there's a tarantula on my fucking sink.
Surprise, motherfucker.
I know. Oh my gosh. This is Florida. Spiders rain on you in the shower. So what kind of food? Let's wrap up on that. What's a good food to go? What I've been noticing is portion control is important. Like, mm-hmm. I seem to know how to make foods. I just don't know how to portion it properly. So that's what I'm working on.
I'm also working on portion control too, but also to like noting when, like, if I'm not hungry, just don't eat, drink some water. So like yesterday I had a really big breakfast and I didn't eat again until like 7:30 at night. Like, wow. It just, you know, wasn't hungry, wasn't there for me, and so I just waited. There just was no reason for me to eat something when I wasn't hungry, so I drank a bunch of water, didn't even have any snacks or anything. So
that's important.
And that's the other thing, is like, you know, I wasn't shaky either, so if I wasn't shaky, then, you know, there really wasn't a point for me to you know, actually eat anything.
Good point. Do you shake from blood sugar or just from lack of eating?
Blood sugar. Like, I'm hypoglycemic, so I'm one of the quote unquote lucky ones that, you know, I have to eat every so often. But I've also noticed too that there are certain things that when I eat them, like, it doesn't, you know, I don't get those blood sugar crashes as often. So
so fructose would probably be good for you because it stays in your body longer.
Yep.
Fuck yeah, I like that. Good. Thanks for being here, Jeffrey.
Absolutely.
Let's wrap up on that. Thank you for being here. Have a great day. Love you. Bye.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time. To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright, tonight we prove once more that the true strength of our nation comes not from the might of our arms or the scale of our wealth, but from the enduring power of our ideals, democracy, liberty, opportunity, and unyielding hope.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbow. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
Ask what you can do to your country.
My poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome to public access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
on Twitter,
Apple
Podcasts, Stitcher,
Smart Radio Public,
and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America. History in the making. Making history in the making.